turn on with the keyboard.
Kunis City Council and Kunis School Board Joint Meeting, July 15th, 2014.
Yes, me.
How are ya?
Lane comes or some others. We need to be out of here by 7:00, because that's when the school board, or when the city council meets, yeah. So why don't we just go around and introduce ourselves to make sure everybody knows everybody? I'm Greg Nelson.
Richard Rupp, City Attorney.
Pat Jones, City Council.
Melanie DeLashman, Human Resources Manager for the School District.
Kenny Brager, Board Trustee.
Carl Erickson, Board Trustee.
Joe Steer, City Council.
Brian Fletcher, Business Manager.
Kevin DeLashman, Assistant Superintendent.
Brianna Rubin-Bomberger, City Council.
Richard Cardoza, City Council.
Thank you, guys. We kind of met Devin and I and what have you, and kind of went over some at least topics. And if there's others that we missed, we can certainly discuss those. But we kind of wanted to update you to start off with economic development and what's going on, because it's pretty evident that we're going to remain poor, both the fire district and the school district, and somewhat the city, unless we have some economic development. And so how are we doing on that? Well, the first thing we did is we revamped the entire Economic Development Committee, and that's a combination of the Chamber of Commerce and the city. And we have people on there that are really interested in following up. You know, one of the things that's difficult for me, I may make the first contact and I may send them information, and I may make a second contact to tell them that we're willing to do anything that else that they need, make a decision to come here. But if I have to make the third and fourth, I feel like almost like I'm harassing them. And you know, so I like the Economic Development Committee to take over and contact them. And that gives them an in to offer other things that we might want to offer. And so how are we doing? We have a plastics plant in Hastings, Nebraska that wants to move here. And we've got our city engineer, who's going on vacation anyway, going back through Nebraska and is going to stop in and look the plant over and make sure that it's what we think that it is. And what they required is that they be on a spur, a railroad spur. And so we got to looking in town, and we've got right next to the railroad track, we've got some land there that railroad said they could easily put a spur into. And so we contacted all of those owners, and all of them are willing to sell, like all of us would be if the price is right. And so they've held right with us, the plant has, and when I talked to him this week, the CEO, he was in a meeting with a Boise Valley construction outfit designing a new plant. And so up to this point, it still looks good.
How many employees would it bring?
100.
100?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So, and they manufacture pipe, the sewer pipe and water pipe. And so it really looks like it would be a growing thing as long as the West, and this will be the West Coast headquarters. So anyway.
Is there a date, you know, when things would start up, or is it still in talks?
No, the next step that we, you know, we've talked to the railroad, and they're willing to come over and do about anything that we say. We've got Department of Commerce ready to sit down with the owner or their representatives and the city and see what it is that they all need and what funds are available out of Commerce. And I happen to know the Department of Ag's got some money when it involves railroad too. So what we'll do is, when he tells us that he wants to come out and sit down, then we'll get the group together and see what all funds can we come up with to help them locate here. Then we also have become aware that Simplot is designing and planning to put a new beef packing plant just down the railroad from our industrial zone on Cloverdale. It would be a big plant, and it would be in the Cuna School District. Wouldn't be in the city limits, but it'd be, I think, in the fire district, or I think the fire district annexed Tyson plant, and I'm not quite sure how they got there, but going down the railroad, it really looks like they would need fire protection, and with us surrounding them, pretty sure their tax dollars would come to the Cuna Fire District too. So we have those two. We still have interest in a theater and McDonald's. I'm not quite sure why they haven't started constructing yet. They're all approved.
A theater is?
Yeah, a theater is considering this, yeah. So, and I need a Big Mac, you know, and a place to sit and watch a movie right here locally. So anyway, we're trying to make sure that we're keeping on what their needs are. Bi-Mart is still interested in us, and so is D&B, and that would be, all of those would be nice, but we don't have any timetable, but we have a new cadre of people that will help us contact them and see what it is that they need. So anyway, any questions on that? Maybe some of you have a plant or something that you know about that we'd be happy to work on. Just, we've got to get this assessed valuation up.
Yeah.
Well, with the spur, with the plastics plant, would there be even more opportunity to draw in more businesses, because we'll be able to say, hey, we've got a spur now, and we can, you know, we can offer that, other than just for the plastics plant?
Well, you know, I'm not sure what spin-off industries might be able to locate here, but certainly if there are, we'll take advantage of that. And we'll probably publicize like that, that we have a plant, and you know, because we want to supply the workers and this and that. And so, you know, the economic development of the city has kind of lagged behind. So if you've got ideas on what we should be doing to improve that, you can sure help us, we'll sure listen. But we actually have something now to put in a industry or a person's hands that think they might be interested. Something that, you know, they can read and gives them all of the pluses of the Cuna area. And we're heavy on how good the schools are. And so, you know, we've kind of come to the conclusion that our schools have always been our strength here in this town, much more than the city itself. Now we're finding out that if we make spurs available off the main main line, that different people have told us, just get out of our way and we'll bring you all the industry you want. So we're working on that with Commerce. And in our new industrial site, it's 400 acres, and so it could attract big manufacturing plants. Did that answer your question?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, and then one of the things that we've been discussing, I don't think gas and diesel prices are ever going down. You know, it looks like we're just going to have to suck it up and pay whatever is demanded. And so that got us thinking about what could we maybe affect for pricing if we all combined, like the fire district, the school district, and the city. And I know we were told that what, $85,000?
Yeah, we had the school district had, Brian was part of that discussion as well. We've been investigating possibly getting bigger tanks, both diesel and regular fuel for our fleet, and in hopes of trying to be able to purchase them a little bit higher bulk, save some costs, hopefully from having had the gas brought out so frequently. And I think when we investigated those costs, it was still about $80,000 and a number of years that it might take us for us to recoup the investment in that. In fact, at one time, we even had some vendors tell us that they don't mind making the trips out and it doesn't really affect our price, but I can't imagine with the cost of gas continuing to go up that could remain true. So it's something perhaps with some partnerships that we should maybe investigate again, at least to look at what we could do. There's also some improvements in the distribution and a new pump and a system, an accounting system, keeping track of how the fuel's dispensed and where it's being dispensed that needs to be done. So a partnership might be able to help us make some of those initial improvements we might be able to share initially. And if really our contracts allow us to bring gas out as frequently as needed, it might allow all of us to start getting some savings while we, make some plans for the future. So perhaps there's not just the big investment and you get it all done in one fell swoop, but maybe a couple of steps we might take together that might prove beneficial for everyone. But it probably would have to be reinvestigated at this time, if I remember correctly, and I'm kind of turning to you, Brian, to make sure I remember correctly. It just didn't seem feasible at this point, especially given the economic condition of the district, that we were able to make that investment. So.
If you remember accurately, we have some. It sounded like a great deal because the original price was around $20,000. We recouped that in 3 or 4 months, but fortunately, when we looked a little deeper, it's actually much higher cost.
Part of that, of course, has to do with the regulations concerning how to store a tank that big, and what you have to do in case there's a spill or anything like that. So, it becomes quite cost prohibitive. The bigger you get, there's more conditions that have to be met, and makes it a little more cost prohibitive.
So obviously, we run a lot of diesel. Obviously, with our buses, they're all diesel buses, aren't they? So, do you have much in the way of diesel, or is that?
We have some, and I think the fire district has some.
Yeah. Does it?
Yeah.
And most fire trucks we try to run diesel anymore because they don't explode so easily.
Makes sense. Okay.
Anyway, we're researching out grant opportunities from the city standpoint, and you from the school standpoint have probably already looked at what the school might be able to bring in.
I thought actually you brought up an interesting proposal, a partnership of some fashion, and having that really could set a foundation for alternative type of fuel vehicles that, grants might help you jumpstart into that area. And, we've looked at propane buses and different things like that, but you really need to be able to make an investment. So, another partnership might be able to help you in some other areas, and grants might be one of them where you might be better positioned to get something that before you just didn't have any potential of getting on your own. So I think that the partnership avenue provides some different opportunities. So
yeah, hopefully you're absolutely right. We find that this is being encouraged throughout the nation that there's some partnerships to be established in energy and just about everything else. They haven't encouraged us too much to jump into teaching. So we'll stay out of that. So, Anyway, and then that gets us right into the next topic, which is energy savings. And this year, we're going to, you know, Boise's already switched 3,000 out of their 8,000 streetlights to LED lights. And they've done so by negotiating a lower price on their contractual thing with Idaho Power at 12 kilovolts per light. We think we can do the same. And so we've got their specifications now, and we'll be adopting the same kind of specifications so we can buy from the same sources they buy from. And we intend to establish an energy savings account. And in that account will come all of the savings that we're going to do in a whole lot of areas there. We have, our sewer plants are on a, it was already supposed to be implemented. We've really been pretty slow in getting it implemented, but it's the same thing that cities our size with that type of sewer system have already got $20,000 in savings on electricity. We're looking at that. We're looking at governors on the big motors so they don't go up and down and waste electricity. And we're looking at changing like the senior center, and we're going to move the history center up to the old city hall. We'll be changing that old city hall to different lighting. If we remain in this building, we'll change all of this. And those savings that are on meters will be paid into this account so that more lights can be bought. And eventually we expect to put solar panels into that same thing. They're getting down now to where they're pretty effective and pretty reasonable. And we kind of think that we just might make that available to developers to put into homes and what have you, people who want them. And we'll work out how they're paid for it. This account will become an account that's used for all of the energy saving things that we're going to do. And then it will be the loan account for anything more that we want to do. So
do you see cities adopting standards for like specifications like you mentioned on the lighting for solar panels so that you
yes.
can kind of put something into code and adopt and then be implementing as well?
Right, and that way, you know, they have to meet those specs, and we don't care then where we buy them. You know, we buy them at the cheapest, but they also meet the specs. And those at Boise say, the ones at Boise are buying say, there's no maintenance or anything for 15 years.
Yeah.
So,
but do you see cities doing the same thing with solar panels, putting specifications
yes.
in like that and doing the same thing?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, because they're like LED lights. You can get them anywhere.
Yeah.
And they might last 26 seconds and they might last 26 years, you know. So, and others have done this. Like Phoenix has a really good program and not so much in Idaho, but there's no reason if we get a good one that doesn't take all of us clambering up on the roof to fix, might be well worth our while. And I don't see, maybe school board does, but I don't see any changes in energy except with up. So we're working on that. The other thing that we've kind of been talking about with Lane is your fiber optic system that's in the school. And how do we enlarge that? And if we enlarge it, who takes care of it? Who, you know, manages it and who bills for it and all? And here, that's another area that we really don't have to reinvent the wheel, because Pocatello's already done it. And then we have the fiber optics here. And Eagles got it in at least part of their city. Star's got it. The sheriff and their fiber optics had kind of dictated to the other cities in Ada County. But at Pocatello, it seems like they have started and just enlarged their system. And so as soon as the gentleman that runs that comes off of vacation, we'll start putting a handle on how do we do this, you know. It just seems to me like we're in a growth phase. We're putting new sewer and water to lots of areas in our town. And why not drop a cable in there to, as we're doing it? That takes care of, you know, a whole lot of the charges.
Are there any other fiber optics in the city anywhere? I know we have our system that we brought around.
Idaho Power has some. Yeah. And they told us the other day that they can program a switch down the line and get it switched before the electricity arrives there. So it's just, it's some of those things that's amazing to me. But, you know, in the economic development end, if we were to offer fiber optics, even in the housing end, you know, there's some subdivisions, you know, that are fiber optic ready or what have you. It just seems like a really good selling deal this day and age. So
is that still kind of the leading edge? I'm not an engineer much, but is that still kind of the leading edge of information data transfer?
Yes. Okay. And you know, it's the cities that Google has taken over and running the fiber optics is a moneymaker deal. A city like us, no Google would be interested in. And so we were looking for cities that are smaller that actually have put it in, and how are they running it, and who's billing for them, and who repairs, and, you know, so, you know, it might come out that we can't afford it or we can't do it because of the technology or what have you, but we'll never get it done unless we investigate it.
Right.
So we're working on it. So. And then
we have much upkeep on our fiber optic that we've run all over the place. I mean, is it a problem that we're constantly running into, or does it run?
It runs, you know, I would have to say pretty well. There's, you know, there's always the. I think our biggest main effort is whenever there's construction, it's come out and locate. And then, of course, it doesn't matter how many times you locate. There's a guy on top of this page just to dig up fiber, right? I swear. It's probably their job because it's always like, hey, you better come look at this because we got fiber hanging on the backbone and nobody wants to move anything. And, you know, everything's still up. It's like, they don't know what to do, right? And so, you know, we've had a couple of repairs and patches, but mostly I have to say that a lot of patches and stuff we've done have been internal to the building too when we restructured something or we had a failure there and it's been actually in the rack system but not out, you know, in the street or anything. We've had a couple relocates, like when they did construction on 10 Mile, we actually moved pipe and moved boxes and some stuff like that, so there's been some costs incurred like that, but it's been pretty good. But you know, in 20 years, you know, we'll have to start thinking about replacement, and that's when some of those bills are going to get a little bigger, and that's going to get a little harder. So we really need to be looking at that facility or something to be able to maintain some of those things.
That's just what I was wondering. If we have, you know, this system, and it's not cheap, but how long is that going to last? How long are we actually going
to last? Yeah, well, we should be able to get between 20 and 30 to 35 years out of what we've installed. Okay. So. And interestingly, you asked about kind of like the leading edge of technology. Fiber's been really quite an interesting technology, and what they've done is they've developed new ways to basically send light through the fiber, so they've been able to increase the speed. So with it basically the same cable plant that you have, you just change the technology on the end, and you don't have to replace the fiber, but all of a sudden, instead of getting like 10 gigabits or 1 gigabit of bandwidth through it, all of a sudden you can double, triple, quadruple, you know, that the amount of information you're able to pass through those wires that you're already using. So it's been, you know, nothing else has really come along that's replaced it yet.
Well, and you know, depending on what it might cost and what technology we may be trying to partner up, and we'd be right with the schools in making that decision as to, because it really is going to be important for economic development in the area. And, you know, if you can offer that even to a restaurant, you know, they can just about tell you whether your credit card's good before you get it out of your pocket. So, anyway, so we're working on that, and we're also working on, in the community development, we really don't like the way that we do parks here, you know. The subdividers give us certain amounts of land that can be used as community parks or playgrounds. And they're not working out very well. Matter of fact, the newer subdivisions don't even like to take care of their entrances. You know, it's just a constant drain on them, they feel. So what we're going to do is, we'll have hearings and all on it, but we're going to change our whole park deal into an impact fee on all houses coming in. And then we'll take that money and buy bigger parks. And that each subdivision might not have its own play area, but it'll be close to a park where they have better play areas. But we think that's a smarter way to go. And I don't know what we're ever going to do with subdivisions that get tired of mowing the entrance lawn. You know, usually if you're going into a subdivision, you know, and it's very attractive and all, everybody's proud enough to take care of it, but not necessarily all of them. And then they try to give them to the city, and, you know, we don't need a whole bunch of subdivision entrances to mow and what have you. So anyway, we're working on that. And we're also going to put change our street lights things so that when we adopt the standard will go out to all the subdividers too, so that when they put lighting into a subdivision, it will be the LED standard lighting. So we think that only makes good sense. And
who pays for the street light costs, electricity costs? Does the city?
Yeah, the most of the street lights are not metered.
Okay.
But they're based upon Idaho Power's knowledge of what they're going to use.
Okay.
And you know, it's we have looked at what Boise did on some metered lights, because there are a few, private and what have you. And it saves up to 65% of the electricity going into that light. So, you know, any of us could enact a savings there. So, we looked at a developer, not a developer, but a outfit in Eagle that was building lights and offered us kind of a deal to switch some bars and see if we liked it or what have you. And it was a great idea, but then they kind of got into some kind of difficulty and what have you. And they didn't withdraw, but they didn't finish with us. And so then when we had heard that Boise had already done the research and made the decision and that their lights were working out very well, then no reason for us to go out and do it any differently. And if we adopt the specs and the Eagle outfit can make it, then we can buy them there. You know, because I don't think we're any different than any other, like the school or other cities in Idaho. We'd like to support our own people. We could. So we have that kind of coming down the pike. And then I think Devin's got some information on the court, and I kind of wanted to hear this. I want our attorney to hear it too, because we also have a big contract with the court on prosecutions and what have you, and it might be that jointly we might get some savings, and that's not easy to do out of the court.
Yeah, I won't know for sure, but really, I guess the update is, I think we briefed you shortly, well, in one of our previous meetings, that we are pursuing a partnership with Judge Manweiler. And really, the goal is to provide students who find themselves in a little bit of a legal trouble for one reason or another, and to provide them alternatives before they actually enter the court system. Research shows that once students really enter the court system and they really have to follow that process, whether it's a juvenile system or an adult system, that they tend not to graduate and they tend really not to do well academically at that point. So the idea is to get interventions and alternatives in place to keep them out of the typical court process, but still provide the school and the student and the legal system some recourse for making sure that student behaviors and issues are resolved. So it's still in its infancy stages and it's still really under discussion, but it seems to be a lot of interest both on the school district's part, because of course we do have some students. I've heard basic statistics that say that we are one of the highest areas that have issues with juvenile crimes, and that we really need some alternatives for students in this area. So we have some really great SROs who are involved at this point. The high school administration is heavily involved. And then, of course, Wendy Johnson, our superintendent. And then also our special ed director is kind of overseeing this, and they all have kind of taken different slants on this and have, I think, different backgrounds that really contribute to wanting us to try and get some alternatives in place. So I don't know that there'll be, there's probably savings because the stuff doesn't really enter the court system directly, and so there should be some savings for the legal system as a whole, but what it will do, you know, for CUNA and what the possibilities are, you know, it's probably still too early to say, as the partnership is still, really still being explored.
You know, wasn't it about 12 years ago, Judge Bailo was out here and they started up the same kind of program, an alternative.
Yeah, we had the juvenile justice.
Was that, yeah, the juvenile yeah. justice. And it yeah. sounds like a lot of the same type of thing. How many years did that go on, and why did it die? Because they don't do that anymore, do they?
No. And you know, it didn't die from lack of support.
Lack of cases.
Yeah.
Right.
The city still liked it. But between the police and the prosecutor, they tried to say that we had overstepped our bounds.
Oh.
And, you know, what I really think it was cutting into the volume that goes into the court too much. And so you never know if what you're being told is the exact. But the chief we have now says it was a good program. You know, he was a probation officer, I think. No, what do you call the one at the school, the SRO? Yeah, he was one of those and felt it was pretty good, and so he's supportive of it, but I don't know that the prosecutor is yet. And whether, I know Zella was kind of in charge, and she had to keep kind of pushing to keep things going, and I don't know that she overstepped any bounds. I can remember a good many kids that ended up in the park painting park benches and what have you, because they had done some damage there. And I loved it. I thought we had one of the best programs around. It just seemed to work. And
well, it'd be good if we can get it going again and get it structured so that it can be continued success.
Some of the stuff too that Zella, I talked to her about. And excuse me for being late. I was entertaining the carpet guys at Indian Creek, and my $10 Rolex watch was $5.15. Anyway, Zella's problem was she had assigned kids to me or to the school district to do community service, and then you'd have to, you know, like, say for instance, I want you to start here and go around the old gym and pull all the puncher lines. But to leave them without someone, some kids were good and some kids were not. You'd assign them a duty and they would go and do it. But then they'd get to screwing off, and you just kind of had somebody cracking the whip. I can't remember the gentleman's name that kind of took in the field. older gentleman, like you, Mayor, and...
Oh, yeah.
But he, that was some of his frustration as well. He'd get the kids, sign them a deal, like painting the benches, and there's just that little bit more that if an adult supervisor was there, the program went off without a hitch. And if I may, I don't know if we're going on, but on the streetlights after we met the other day, I know that, and Wendy, chime in anytime, CUNA Dark Skies was part of the requirement for PMZ that they handed down, that we had a certain size bulb that we used in different locations. So another thing to follow up on there is, say for instance, Silver Trail was the last school that we'd done, and we met all the new energy requirements. But there are some, like I talked about the other day. So Silver Trail would be good on Mason Creek going down, because we actually had to change ballasts and bulbs in those because they come with the wrong fixtures and stuff, and they were a higher energy eating bulb. So the reason I bring this up is some of the schools are already there, but there are some that aren't. And I believe that anything new that the city has put in from such and such date meet those new energy requirements. And Gordon could probably tell us best on that. But there are a bunch that, do need.
Yeah, we're going to have to check all of that to make sure we're not just causing more costs without benefits. But anyway, we're intent on getting some savings, and we'll take the schools right with us as long as we don't create more problems for you.
Right.
And I know Powers worked with us on a number of things, and I think, you know, there might be a case where we work with them together. Perhaps we'll have to do, you know, the energy savings will help us, the incentives that they've been providing us help us make some of those changes. Of course, given our budgets and where we're at right now, facility levies and those kinds of things, these are all still difficult conversations, but as long as we're doing it together, I think then, you know, the plan can be in place, and it can't happen if you don't have a conversation.
And I appreciate the conversation, because we have tried to keep it going. And the incentive program that Idaho Power offers, and I don't know, Wendy probably knows, is huge right now. We had 86 high bay lights in the high school. The last remaining lights that were high bays that are slow coming on, and of course, and we just switched all those out. The fixtures cost $184 a piece to buy them, and Idaho Power was giving us almost $120 per fixture to change them out. So a lot of these are no-brainer concept things that we need to take effect with.
And if I may, while I'm still kind of on the school district topic, number five, if I could interject one item I just wanted to make sure everybody was aware of, is that CUNA High School this year is bringing on the first Air Force ROTC program in Idaho. And we just, Lieutenant Colonel Timmerman just reported to duty to work this week, and is just getting started, and we're getting classrooms set up, and that's going to be quite the program. There's going to be, you know, $3,000 worth of equipment is brought in and has to be maintained for those students that are be part of that program. So, you know, tailoring of the uniforms to every student every year, sewing on patches, cleaning those uniforms, that all kind of goes into some community support and dollars that come from the Air Force for that program. So it kind of leads, I suppose, into a little bit of economic development, but really an outstanding program and an opportunity for the kids at the high school. And it should be quite the program. Colonel Timmerman has done this for 4 or 5 years, if I understand properly, and I think he knows what it takes to build a program. So I think we should see something that will turn out to be quite successful at the high school. He's asked if we might, at one of our joint meetings, be able to take some time with him to explain really what the program's about. It's really a course that's divided up into, you know, two or three different categories. Physical education is part of that, leadership and drill, and of course, some kind of avionics and flight history. And so there's quite a level of competence that's required to fulfill the requirements for that course. So we're pretty excited about that. I want to make sure you're aware that we're the first in Idaho, and if we can, at one of our next meetings, take a few minutes, maybe 15 minutes, to review a presentation from him so that we can all see what it's about.
And then remind me, how many students are going to be in the program?
Well, they like to have between 100 and 150 And we started without really having done much. The school worked on training to recruit, but we have over 107 students. I think we have 107 students that are signed up right now, ready to go, without having an instructor there or you know.
Yeah, we had that before the program was even approved by the Air Force, so there was a lot of interest in it.
Yeah, Steve Fisher, one of our counselors, who's Brad Fisher's brother, he was retired Air Force, so he was the one who was pushing this to get going. And he was a counselor at the high school, so he was able to talk to kids and kind of get some kids excited about it. He's actually now on leave as a counselor to be a teacher in the program.
No.
Oh, yeah. I thought that was what. All right.
No.
They actually look, as Colonel Timmerman mentioned, they look for folks that have retired from the military that come in and teach these programs. It's quite impressive. One thing that I liked when we met with him yesterday at the new classroom that he's getting is one day a week they'll all be in uniform.
Oh, neat.
It's going to be cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then thoughts about what we do with the Veterans Day celebration that we do and their participation in that, I think just elevate it to another level. And we already know that we've done one of the best programs really in the Valley already. So, and he's really a sharp guy, and I'm really expecting great things from that program. So I just want to make sure you're aware of it.
And then we did have the change in the high school principal. I'm not sure that you're all aware. I know that you are aware that Carla Reynolds did leave us, but we have Brian Graves, who is the principal at Indian Creek and Ross Elementaries, is the new principal of the high school. So he's already working, and so a big change there, but he's a CUNA guy, so I think he'll do a great job there. So I just wanted you to know about that.
And he was a previous vice principal or building administrator at the middle school, so he has some secondary experience. And
started as an elementary teacher. So
Idaho native from Northern Idaho, so pretty excited about his leadership there as well.
Well, you know, as far as the ROTC program, Lane and I really have this kind of pact that we have to sign off on any kind of military.
Yeah,
we represent one corps that we're pretty proud of.
Another thing on the ROTC program, too, if he gets 151 kids, there's also additional aid from the military to put a second teacher in place. So there's a lot of pluses with this program. It's going to be pretty cool, pretty impressive.
Great, yeah. Okay. Well, Wendy, did you bring the growth thing? You can kind of go over briefly with the.
I did. I did quarterly building permit summary. We did a total of 107 permits, 31 new home permits. Three permits for remodel, one permit for addition, three move-on buildings.
Now, what's the time period?
April, May, June.
Okay.
And one commercial tenant improvement and 65 miscellaneous permits. And for active subs, we have 666 lots in process with one multifamily. It's going to be a two-phase with a total of 157 units, give or take some. We have CUNA Cave storage permits ready to be picked up. McDonald's permits pretty much ready to go. We have Ultimate Heating and Air moving in into our industrial area. And they're going through a design review process right now.
Nice.
Is it
31 new homes in the quarter?
Yes.
Wow.
Is 31 new stick-built homes.
Right.
But then you have your three, four, after that.
They're each required to have at least seven kids.
Seven kids.
Wendy, is some of those across from Silver Trail in what is it called now, the
Applewood, Silver Trail, is that what
it's the old Applewood, which is now Danskin, right? Mr. X.
Yeah.
I've got Cerro Trail 2.
That'd be the one.
And then Dancing Ridge, new one.
Because right now we transport those kids, you know, so they're not going through the construction area. So So as soon as that done, we'll be happy because then they'll have a walking...
This is not a big one, talk about that.
Yeah, we'll have a walking path there soon, I hope.
Well, maybe just to emphasize, since we're on that, you know, we did work with that subdivision there that was walking through that, what is now a construction zone, and so we are providing safety busing from that subdivision. We started that early last year in preparation for this, so that Mr. Heck wouldn't have to worry about that, and the community and the kids would be safe. So that safety busing is already in place for that to continue. So that was something that we worked through early last year in preparation for that. I was going to say something else, and now I just went.
So all the help you can with that, to push that through, so...
Oh, the other thing I was going to tell you is that this has also affected our open enrollment process, which, you know, being part of the community, you might hear some grumblings about, but typically with open enrollment, we try and let people, you know, kind of go to whatever school, the community have some school choice, but, you know, really we have to protect Crimson Point and Silver Trail and the people who live closest in that school zone for them to be able to attend school, you know, where they were intended to go. So we're starting to have to look at what we're approving for open enrollments, and that will really go into effect this year as we start actually saying, you know, look, we know you live way outside of town, but you may not be able to go to Silver Trail because we just don't have the room for it. And we're starting to protect and preserve room so that as those homes come on, there's going to be space in that school for growth. So that, I'm worried about the impact that will have on community. I'm in charge of that. I'm hoping to make sure that people are happy, but that there are going to be some people we're going to have to tell no, and that's usually does not make people happy, as you know.
So. All right, well, we're not helping you in that philosophy. We're just adding
holes. Well, and that's okay. That's a good problem to have.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a lot better than the other one, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Well, but then how are we coming on the bond issue for the swimming pool, Boys and Girls Club, and the YMCA? We were notified when we moved from November to March that the county notified us you can't have an election in March. That's all. We reserved that for just emergencies. So now it's May. But if we would have had it in November, we would have already had to have the petitions at all signed and into the clerk's office on the 15th, so this month. Because I guess they probably have to go over each name and check it out, and then that takes a while, I'm sure.
Not as long as you think. No, it really doesn't. They have it. It's all on computers, so.
Oh, yeah. Well, they give themselves 6 months. or thereabouts.
Yeah. So really, because of all that, it won't happen until May then.
Right. And the one thing that's really happened is the land that was given to the Boys and Girls Club, we tried to buy additional land, and that was set at a very, very high price. And so then all the little leagues and what have you wanted us to try to bring more land in so that we had finally enough fields in this city to actually put all the kids into little league that wanted to. And so we looked at taking an additional 18 acres, and the owner would not budge one dime on the price, and so that was about three times more than anything that had been bought in this town. And he said, "Well, it won't make any difference. You know, you're going to spend $15 million. What do you, if you spend a couple million on land? Nobody's going to care." Well, yes, they will care in Cuna. I think that if the word got out that we actually paid three times what the going rate was, I think it would kill that bond issue right off. So we looked at two other sites. And all of them are a lot more affordable, and they're almost as accessible to the schools as the one up by Butler. So we haven't made our mind up yet. We've only recently got a price per acre on the one farthest east in town. All of them are within the city limits, and all of them are within the this side of the highway and all. So we haven't gone out. We've tried to pick sites that we could service fairly easily. And so that decision hasn't been made. So we can't be running around with petitions until that decision is actually made. So we're getting close to making it, but we haven't made it yet.
I think it's also important to note that I think this is actually a big step towards economic development too. A lot of the companies that look to locate places, they want to know what there is to do in those areas for the kids and the families, and if they have things to do, that makes for happy employees, and happy employees are good employees. So that's crucial in some of the businesses' decision on whether or not to come to Cunis. So we need to be able to provide for something for that type of thing. So I think it's very important. It's not just getting a recreation center and a swimming pool. It's got a way deeper meaning than that. So.
Yeah, it's for sure. All of that ties together, and all of it affects, you know, your ability to recruit business and what have you as to what do you do, you know. And in this town, I think we're a very good example of, for 50 years, we've never done anything for the kids. You know, we put in a skateboard park and that was it. But we put in half the skateboard park. And then we're quite surprised when we find out, you know, we've got such a big drug problem that was developing. Even people from Melba tell me that, you know, their kids were coming to our skateboard park for drugs. And you can't operate that way. And so we put a lot of heat on doing away with the openness of that. We've arrested some 12, 13, and 14-year-old dealers. And, you know, I don't know, but I thought my education was pretty good, but at 12, I'm not so sure I could have kept the books from all this drug stuff, you know, because I think it's big bucks. So I think that's one part of the reason why we're doing what we're doing, is to give those kids something to do in summer, keep them busy. And our summer program that we started this year, you know, the our Ranger program is very popular. The trouble with it is it's only 40 kids. Now we're starting a bike program. We were discussing that today about, we've identified 50 kids that don't have bikes. And we're putting all these bike paths and all of this and that, and we've got a big group of kids that don't have bikes. So we're starting the program now to repair bikes and get the ones that are stolen and what have you that are usually auctioned off to come here for that we can give them to kids that need them. And I think Chris told us that out of those 40 Rangers, there were something like 19 of them that didn't have bicycles. And so, you know, put all this effort in getting them on their bikes and find out, you know, they can't afford a bike. So we're working on that. We'll have that one solved. Richard's going to put in some kind of a biking contest we're planning, because you got to have activities, get the kids interested, to get them off of their couches and onto their bikes. So we're trying to help the schools in that. Not only will maybe after the summer we'll send you kids that are actually more interested in physical stuff, but actually in better shape than they are now.
Thank
Kathy Gailey's program right now is at our high school, and soon will be the middle school, is storing some of those bikes for repair. So I hope she does know about this program, right?
Yes, because we had one of the gals in from, I think it was the school, or at least part, yeah, that, where they work together, and they're actually training kids to do, yeah, some of the repairs. And that'll be offered. And so we're just putting all of the names together and all of it. We work real close with Kathy. Love her program. Love what you guys have done in creating that. That's very good.
We told her if she needed storage that we would come up with it somewhere for, you know, 10 or 12 bikes. So she's already asked.
Okay. Okay, but here again, you know, everything you try to do in this town, there's kids you've almost got to take care of, you know, and there's, we're not a poor town, but we're certainly not a rich town either. So our trouble is we've got more kids than most towns, and so we've got to do something for them. And we've got some good programs coming in. And we're all still enthusiastic about it. If we get your assessed valuation up in the school, and maybe you won't have to pass two supplemental levies.
Yeah. So.
Well, assessed value doesn't help as much as having the legislature pony up.
Yeah.
The assessed value going up just means the rate's going down, but we're still collecting. We still need the same amount of money. So.
Well, at least. At least you can show the individual homeowner, you know, a
lower rate.
Yeah, a lower rate, yeah. That'll make everybody a little happier.
Except when they go, well, my taxes didn't go down.
The extra businesses, though, will certainly
help. Yeah, the businesses will help a ton.
One of the things, and then this is the last thing I'll bring up. I was at the RC&D meeting today, and Canyon County has a bus. What do they call it? Like a bus scholarship thing where they go around and collect money for paying part of the busing for kids to go on, like the Celebration Park and some of the things that they need to see in Canyon County. And they pay a bus. It costs them $200 to take a bus. And they pay $100. Each school in Canyon County has to apply for it. And the only reason the RC&D is involved is kind of that some of their people are the ones that go out and solicit money. And so I don't see any reason why we couldn't establish that in Canyon. And it would be. We'll have to look and see how Canyon County, I think the RC&D actually runs the program because it's accountable for the dollars. But it's a darn good idea, and it's, you know, here again, the cost of busing isn't going to go down. And like when we took the kids on that over to the Botanical Gardens and the old pen. You know, if the letters I got are any indication, the kids really enjoyed it, and a good many of them mentioned it was the only field trip they got, and those were fifth graders. And I really don't know. I haven't checked into the schools and all, but do the classes? I know you used to go down to Celebration Park, take them down there, and maybe some other place. Is all of that gone now? Is there no field trips for?
Not unless the school and the community that supports that school fundraises to support the that event. There's just all the budgets with the constraints that none of that is going on. They do walking field trips inside the school boundaries and inside the school, and that's about it. like I said, unless, and sometimes the school will raise specifically for a special event, and so there are some things that do go on, but they have to raise the money.
Well, you know, that's pretty, a pretty vital part of their education, I would think. And, you know, we've labeled all the trees and what have you now, and like the kids that are becoming our park rangers, they'll be able to take the other kids. And, you know, we were surprised at how many of the kids in the, like, schools up at Grimson Point or the one on further north, how many had never been to the Green Belt, how many even knew there was a creek there, or there was fishing, or there was, you know, so we're not, we've not made it real advertised a lot to the people that live in the outlying areas, because you'd think between the kids in school and their parents, somebody would have made it downtown. But that doesn't happen 100% to find that out.
Well, and having being born and raised in Southeast Idaho, you know, we're so close to the capital, I really, really wish we could get some of that money back to be able to do some things. I think, you know, fourth grade is Idaho history. You think to be able to go down to the Capitol building and explore it and experience it, you know, would be such a great thing where you're so close, but, you know, even those kinds of things are difficult, so.
Well, you know, I was a lobbyist for a number of years and watched those fourth graders coming in from all over. And those kids really did enjoy going to the State House. And, you know, CUNA being this close, that's another thing. You know, a good many of the kids that we took from Botanical Gardens have never been there.
Yeah.
A good many of them haven't been to the old band.
Yeah.
And, you know, those are things that they say that were so enjoyable for them. So maybe if we had a fund that some of the bigger outfits would donate to. They seem to be doing it in Canyon County. I think Ada County's fair game.
Sure.
So anyway, we wouldn't do that on our own. We would involve Lane, we would involve all of you and what have you. Okay, are there anything else? It's an enchanting hour.
There's a big event through Chris with the BMX folks called today. I guess it's this weekend, Chris?
Yes, sir.
That they've asked, so there's supposedly a big turnout for the BMX park. They've asked to use the old gym site for parking, and I said, you bet. So they're expecting a big group this weekend.
Okay.
Thank you
very much for coming. There's still cookies there if you're...